Let the record show that the Transportation Committee meeting was convened at 1:07, and today we have the privilege of again meeting jointly with the Senate Transportation Committee. And Senator Kukesh, would you like to recognize the senators that are here?
I have Senator Menard here from Wasilla, and Senator Meyer, and Senator Passman. And just for the information of the individuals in the audience and those who may be online, we have a conflict of a meeting this afternoon, so some of the senators will have to leave to another meeting. But just for the information of everybody here, we are getting this on record, and some of us are going to be here, but I just want to, when you see some senators leave, that it's only because of a conflict this afternoon. So thank you for being here to start us off.
And also, the House members that are here are Representative Munoz and myself, yeah. Wilson, and that's it. And Representative Grunberg has been excused. So we may have some people coming in and out on the House side also. Mm-hmm. So before we start the meeting, I do want to announce our very, very important help, who without them we wouldn't even be able to have our meeting. So the Senate Recording Secretary is Carrie Cooper Ryder, and the House Recording Secretary is Nancy Hemingway, and Chris Spannon is our LIO moderator, and Becky Rooney is my trusty right arm. She's my committee aide. And the Senate Committee 8 is Nancy Barnes, she's sitting right up front there. So before we start the meeting, please shut off your cell phones. And for you that haven't been here before, that means totally off, because if you just put them on a vibrate, it does interfere with our other technical devices that are up here with the microphones and whatnot. And let the record show that Representative Dugan has just joined us. And also, I wanted to note that in front of you are the answers to the questions that we had asked just 2 days ago. I want to thank the department for being so quick and with the answers and everything. And the answers are there. I would like you to go over them when you get back, not right now, but when you get back to your offices. If you have questions or want to go in further with anything, let me know, and we'll get the specialist for that question to come to the committee if you have further questions. So that brings us to our meeting agenda today. And we're going to change our focus from our traditional highways to our marine highway system. And our first item is an overview presentation by Jim Beadle, who is the Deputy Commissioner of DOT. And we have actually allotted an hour and 15 minutes for this. And then we're at 2:25, we're going to shift a little bit and make sure that we have ample time for the second presentation, which is our Alaska Class Ferry project. So I'm kind of excited about that. So Jim, if you would come forward and state your name and affiliation again, just to make sure we have it on the record.
So for the record, my name is Jim Beadle. I'm Deputy Commissioner in charge of Marine Operations. This is my first opportunity to present to a committee, so if I get out of line or don't follow the rules, please just, you know, don't throw the gavel, just let me know. And Madam Chair, if it's okay, I was here on Tuesday, and I thought the committee that you ran with Jeff Otteson was excellent with the questions right after the slides or during the slides, whenever, and if that's okay with you, that works for me.
Okay, we will do it.
Can we turn those lights so the slide turns? So I'd like to start. The Let's Go See Alaska, that is the marketing logo for the Alaska Marine Highway System, and you'll see that on almost all of our ads. I'd like to thank the legislature. You started a few years ago and appropriating $500,000 for marketing. That contract is Bradley Reed up in Anchorage, and they do an excellent job in advising us, and their ads are superb. So thank you for the money, and thank Bradley Reed, and we have an excellent marketing manager at the Marine Highway System that's doing a very effective job with that $500,000. As the commissioner mentioned on Tuesday, I've had a long history with the Marine Highway System of working on the vessels, and that vessel, the Malaspina, I spent my last 10 years as chief purser on. I worked on it from 1994 to 2004 when I came shoreside to be ops manager. I'm here to tell you that those vessels are very safe and that they're very well maintained. I think they're beautiful. That's quite a picture of a very good looking boat. So I'm a little biased, but the mission of the Alaska Marine Highway System, the most important thing to us, the managers, is safety. And safety is the first word that's there. Everything we do comes around safety. And so that drives almost every decision. First, it's got to be safe, and then we'll look at the rest of the things that are out there. This next slide, it comes out of the systems analysis. We're hoping that within the next couple of weeks that we can present you with a copy of that. This is one of the best timelines for the history of the Marine Highway that I've ever seen. As far as I know, the first commercial carrier that operated in Alaska was something called the Chukut Motor Lines. It operated between Haines Gagway and Juneau, and it started in 1949. By 1952, they couldn't operate anymore. They couldn't afford it. And so the territory of this took it over and started operating it. The first year of operation, they actually exceeded the operating expenses by $277. But in 1952, they began to lose $43,000 a year due to ferry repairs, maintenance, and terminal upkeep. Madam Chair, if it's okay, I'd like to pass around this picture. This is a picture of the Chukut. Okay. It's a landing craft. It has two employees and three docks. And if anybody thinks that you can run a system, a marine highway system in this state, and make it pay for itself, I think that proves that it's almost impossible. You might be able to cover the operating expenses on certain runs, but when it comes to the maintenance and operation and the replacement of vessels, it isn't going to happen. And all the way from 1952, people should have been aware of that. As you look at this timeline, I think it's very important to note that the state of Alaska purchased most of the vessels all the way up until the Kennecott, I believe, through bond issues. And those bond issues were voted on by the people of the state of Alaska. So when you ask the question, why do we go there? Almost all of the ports we go to were voted on by the people of the state of Alaska to purchase a boat to provide service to that community. Huge timeline. Very important vessel was the Chilkat. When Alaska became a state, they took over the Chilkat from the territory, and we built the first three vessels. The Chilkat then became a spare because it was running between Juneau, Haines, and Skagway, and it went to Prince William Sound. They said, this is good, state liked it, and they bought the Bartlett. So when the Bartlett went to Prince William Sound, the Chilkat came back to Juneau and started providing service to Hoonah. The state decided to buy the Laconic, took over the Hoonah run. So the Bartlett went south to Prince of Wales and Metlakatla. They bought the Aurora to take over that run. And so the Chilkat kind of pioneered a whole bunch of the runs throughout Southeast Alaska. Very important, tiny little vessel, very, very weather dependent for the people that ever rode it. In rough weather, it was quite a ride. This is what I think, in my mind, is the biggest challenge for the Alaska Marine Highway. 3,500 miles, low population, tough weather conditions. And that's from Florida to the middle of the United States all the way to Canada, or pardon me, to California. When you compare that to the BC ferries that's there, the Washington State ferries, they haul millions of people and millions of cars. Washington State ferries 200 miles, and they have problems maintaining their ferries and keeping their ferries up. BC ferries 755 miles. They have a lot of runs. They have three of them that actually make money. They're in the population centers down around Vancouver. The rest of them are just like us. They all lose money on their runs.
Jim, I'm just going to interrupt here just a little bit and let the record show that in the audience we have Representative Seaton and Senator Davis. And I think if anybody else comes in, please let me know. Go ahead, Jim. Sorry.
So the next slide. This is a fleet profile. And in 1991, the Marine Highway System commissioned Gloston and Associates to do a study on life of the vessels, when they needed to be replaced. So, and unfortunately, it doesn't show up there for some reason on the replacement dates. But the first one coming up, I don't know why it shows perfectly on the printouts, but the first one that really needs to be replaced is the Malaspina. It is 2016 is the date that's there. And the reason why the Malaspina, when you got the Mat, the Mal, and the Taku all built in the same year, the Malaspina is the first one, it's because Malaspina still has its original engines. The Matanuska and the Taku have had their engines replaced. So at some point in time, if you're going to keep the Malaspina, you got to make a decision to put $20 million worth of new engines in there, which then extends the life another 20 years, and is it worth maintaining this old ship for 20 more years? And they have said that the best thing to do is replace it by 2016.
And with the lull, let be known that Representative Johansson has joined us.
Boy, these don't quite line up like they do on the recent passenger traffic comparisons. and good timing, Representative Johansson. I thank you for your comments on the floor the other day when he made the comment that the Alaska Marine Highway System is much bigger than just Southeast Alaska. And indeed, we have been focusing a lot of our time and a lot of our money and our ships on Southwest in Prince William Sound. And if you start on the left side there, you can see that in Southwest Alaska, We've gone from 19,700 people up to 27,900 passengers in a year. We did that. That's a 42% increase in passenger ridership since 2005. We did that providing replacement service with the Kennecott when the Tustamina went out the chain. So Kodiak, Homer, Soldovia don't lose service when you take the Tustamina and provide service out the chain. That's how that traffic grew. The next line over, the Prince William Sound, that's a 53% increase from 2005 to 2008. We rebuilt the docks at Cordova, Valdez, and Whittier. We put the fast ferry Chinika up there in the summertime. The Aurora provides service year-round and provides a connection between Valdez and Whittier in the summertime. So 53% increase. Another vessel, but a lot of population growth. You've almost got to the point now that you can't take a lot more people to Cordova without Cordova getting more infrastructure. They need more hotels. They need more, you know, they need rental cars. They need RVs. They bed and breakfasts. I mean, talk to Cordova. They are very, very happy just with the bed tax revenue that has increased for them. 15% increase in Southeast Alaska, 21% increase overall to the system. And the important thing to note is that we now have 68% of the ridership on the Alaska Marine Highway System are Alaskans. So we have taken the system and focused more on the locals, and the locals are using the system. They are here year-round. They're not here for a trip of a lifetime, and some of them use it weekly.
Jim, would you repeat that again? What percent are Alaskans?
68%. 67-68% are Alaskans, and that continues to grow, and I think that you'll see this coming summer, man, is a hard one to predict. You've got all kinds of people saying that the tourists aren't coming. Fortunately, we've been doing what we've been doing, and that's focus on Alaskans, and hopefully they will still travel, but they don't get hit too bad, and we'll see what happens with the tourists. I think it's important to note for people that really know the Marine Highway System that our largest traffic year was 1992. And in 1992, we carried 420,000 people and 113,000 vehicles. In 1992, the Alaska Marine Highway System provided service to Hollis, from Ketchikan to Hollis. That is now done by the IFA, the Inter-Island Ferry Association, and those numbers are no longer included in our counts. So if you add the 13,800 vehicles and the 57,000 people that used to be our numbers back in 92 onto our numbers, we are carrying the last 2 years more vehicles than have ever been carried in the history of the Marine Highway System. And we're not that far off for people. So we're not doing near as bad as a lot of people think when you just look at the numbers. And vehicle comparison, same thing, 29% up in Southwest, 69% up in Prince William Sound, 21% up in Southeast Alaska, and 27% up overall. Good numbers. We in the Marine Highway System have been focusing on the car deck, and we do that in the summertime by saying if you're going round trip, mirror image round trip, driver goes free. We want to fill the car decks. This is a highway for vehicles, and that's what we're focusing on, is trying to fill up the car decks. So we at DOT and AMHS are very proud of these results here. The 75% line is the Alaska Marine Highway's mission and measures for on-time departures. Excuse me, and we're at 93%. And the 95% line is for customer satisfaction, and we're at 96%. And I'll tell you, to be at 96% for passenger satisfaction and the highest level, extremely satisfied, that number has been growing and getting higher for the Marine Highway System. So we're very proud of those numbers. Traffic utilization. One of our mission and measures is supposed to be the growth in passenger traffic. And as you look at this, you can see the downturn line, and then we've turned it up from 2006, 7, and 8. Is even more important to me is the vehicle traffic. And we've done the results from 2006, 2007, 2008 to have 56% utilization on the car deck on a year-round number. That means our summertime traffic is huge. You know, we got a lot of ships sailing around in the summertime at 80-90%. So these are good numbers. This is an interesting and a telltale slide. I could talk about this one for hours. You see a jump there from 2005 to 2006 on the total line. That has a lot to do with the PERS increases. 766 pay raise for the employees on the Marine Highway System. And in 2006, this is what we call full operation. This is pretty much running all the vessels all the time. And that line you see out there is if we would have kept doing that, if we would have kept running all the vessels all of the time, it would have stayed there, and fuel costs during this last year would have spiked way up. The important thing to note about this is that the Alaska Marine Highway System has spending under control in our budgets. The one line there, that it's a yellow-orange line, it's either even or trending down a little bit, and we have done that by, number one, not running all the vessels all the time. The people that don't get service don't like that. The Lakani is no longer a 24/7 boat. It's pretty much a day boat. It runs with less crew. It uses less fuel because it only sails, you know, less than 12 hours a day at running time instead of up to 24 hours or 20 hours a day running time. The fast ferries, we don't run two of them all year round. In the wintertime, we only run one, and that only runs 4 days a week, and it's off 3 days a week. And if we didn't have those screaming northerlies, it would run 4 days a week. So,
hey, Jim. The yellow on,
well, it's I'm colorblind, so it's,
oh, okay,
that orange, well, line or what green, I don't know what color it is up there on the board.
The required state contribution. I guess I wasn't even aware that there was a required state contribution.
And it's wording for the general fund budget. Okay, right. And the reason for that there being a big difference there is the Marine Highway System, thanks to legislation by you, now takes all of the earnings off of the ferries. It goes back in the Alaska Marine Highway account, and we use that to fund about 33% of our operation now. So it's very crucial that when our business manager makes a guess on what our ticket revenues are going to be, that's helping to fund the Marine Highway System. And it's on another side, you'll see that's one of the concerns we have with this coming year is he makes a lot of guesses because but that's funding our operation. So that's what gets us up to the top line is above the general funding mark.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you, Mr. Beadle. Can you just briefly touch on a few of the things that you're doing, some of the smaller things you mentioned when we were on the bridge coming up from Ketchikan, I think it was last year, it was this summer when you and I and Captain Falvey were on the bridge of the Taku, I think. The little things that you're doing to try and reduce the operating costs, like the fuel management program that you've put on some of the vessels and how that is going, you're going to implement that on all your vessels and how much that saves?
You bet. It was one I was going to get to down towards the end. We actually took a fuel management system and put its power management system is what it's called, but it manages the fuel usage with a computer. We put it on the Aurora during the last overhaul period. They were suggesting that we would get up to a 12% fuel efficiency using less fuel out of this system. I'll tell you, it really works well if the master and the chief engineer work together in making it work well. And the Aurora has been a great example. We've been doing it at least 12% or better. And the more you get to know the system, the more you work with it, the better it is. We are installing it on the Matanuska and the Tustamina in their capital improvement projects this winter. We hope to request money to put it in the Columbia in the next CIP project for the Columbia. These are long lead items that take a whole bunch of engineering and work because they got to connect everything up to a computer on the whole ship. So the system on the Aurora cost about $250,000. The system on the Matanuska, because it's a much bigger ship, is $298,000, and the Tustamina was about $256,000. The Aurora, we're looking at maybe $120,000 this year savings on fuel. So it's working.
Follow up, Representative Johansson.
These are the kind of things, it's more of just a comment, but these are the kind of little things that people who, like Mr. Beadle, who know the ships and know the system and are mariners themselves, can really implement into the system that saves, even if it saves $1 million, $2 or $3 million a year, that makes it a lot easier for us to go to the Finance Committee and talk to them about financing this system. So I'm really pleased that you guys are doing that, and that's, I think, a direct correlation to having people who know how to run ships actually run the ships and keep the politicians out of the way.
Thank you very much. That's I agree. Go ahead, Jim. Any other questions? Okay, go ahead.
So there are a couple other things that we have done with the system, and I'll go a little bit further on this. This last summer, for the first time, we took the Kennecott and it runs 2 weeks on, and then it's laid up 2 weeks to save on fuel costs, to save on crew costs. We dropped the Bellingham boat in the summertime down to one vessel. It's now the Columbia alone in the summertime. These things save on operating costs, and I will tell you they also save on crew costs because the Alaska Marine Highway System has a lot of challenges. But one of the challenges, besides the 3,500 miles, no population, and rough weather, is we don't run all the boats all the time. Our employees don't have permanent jobs year-round. We're running 6 ferries right now. We have 11 of them. And when you try to gear up, especially with our licensed engineers, our licensed masters and mates that have to have the pilots, and it's years and years and years to get qualified people, and you don't run the boats all the time, they create hardships into getting them. So by doing what we did, we have cut down holdover time, we've cut down overtime for the crews, and we actually cut our budget last year by not having to hold people on overtime because you can't get enough qualified people to run the boats. And those qualified people are on the COIs, the Certificate of Inspections of the Coast Guard says, you gotta have this guy in order to run the boat. You don't have him, you don't run him. So it's a huge challenge for the Marine Highway System. That's that for a side. Alaska Marine Highway boardings by community, and is what really, and this is for 2007. It was the last data. The interesting thing to me here is that Anchorage is number four on the list of communities that are served. I would like to focus on Metlakatla. Metlakatla is a community of, you know, it says 1,244 people up there. It's served by one boat with one crew with five people, and it carries 24,000 people. Wow. That's what day boats do. That's what boats do that do what the people want and go where the people want. So Metlakatla leaves Ketchikan, or pardon me, they leave Metlakatla in the morning, they go to Ketchikan. We do two runs a day, so they all go back home at night. I've talked to people that literally, you know, weighing up to 3 days sometime to get their car on that boat, depending on the special occasion that might be going on. They want more services. What we're going to do is they've built a road that's going to shorten the trip. We're building new terminals that are getting them closer together. We're going to be able to make more trips in a daytime, and it's actually going to cost us less money. So that's the model. But when you hear us talk about where we want to go and what we want to do, the model works.
Senator Kukuyesh.
I just wanted to make a comment here that one of the big differences in Metlakatla is that crew lives in Metlakatla.
Correct.
And that makes a huge difference. And if you did that to every community and you had a crew in every community where they didn't have to go to a central place, make a huge difference. And Metlakatla believes that that's one of the reasons they're so successful.
You're 100% right. You can start the boat out where the people live so you can get them back there so they don't have to. I mean, a lot of times everybody can come to Juneau, but you got to spend the night. You know, this works perfectly for the people by basing the boat in the community that needs the service and taking them to where their banks and the shopping centers are and the hospitals, and then bringing them home in the same day so they don't have to spend the night making it so they can take their car, so they don't have to use, you know, taxis everywhere, buses everywhere, so they can buy their stuff, put it in their rig, and take it back home again. You're correct, Senator.
Thank you.
So, FY09 update. At this time, the Alaska Marine Highway is tracking with its business plan that supports the FY 2009 management plan. Currently, we have and foresee no supplemental requests for you on our operating budget. Commissioner has given the orders, managed to the budget, no supplemental, and we're sticking to that. We do have a signed agreement with the IBU. You will be seeing a monetary note for that agreement of about $2 million that'll be coming before you.
Jim, what does that encompass, that $2
million? So the IBU have not had a contract since June 30th of 2007.
So in other words, that means that they're just going by what the old schedule was.
Right. So they've had no pay raises. Nothing has changed in the contract since 2007. They did not do the 3% rollover that the other two maritime unions did. They felt that it wasn't fair, it wasn't enough, and they turned it down. So they've gone from 2007 to 2009, they'll have no pay raises. They will get a lump sum payment of $21.37 on 7-1 of 2009. They'll get a 5% pay raise that'll kick in then. So the lump sum is for the 2 years they didn't get anything. The 5% takes place 7-1 of 09 and a 4% 7-1 of 2010. And that's what, in order for us to pay that, you guys will have to allow that.
Okay, so that's a 9% pay raise.
Right.
Boy, that's pretty good, especially in these economic times.
Tough times. I will tell you, and I was there every day, I'll tell you that Annette, Commissioner Kreitzer and her people, they are in charge, DOA is in charge of negotiations, tough negotiations. They gave up some things to get what they got. You've got the Jones Act that has their hands in the pot here. We've taken unearned wages. You can't do away with it because of the Jones Act, but we've managed it lower for the IBU. We've put an end date on it. We split wages when an employee doesn't show up for work. They're no longer just automatically 12 hours worth of work that gets split up among the employees. If you need to work overtime, you get it. Otherwise, that's it. And they have set up another tier of vacation. So down the line, new employees that come along are going to get less vacation. So they've given up some things to get what they got. It was not easy to get what we got, but they got something. I think it's very important that we pay a fair wage, but they've given up some things too that will benefit us down the line. And the Marine Highway is going to be here for a long, long time. And down the line, I think DOA did a good job.
Well, and I think that's important that we know what the give and take was. I mean, that helps us understand where things are at and why they're where they're at. So thank you very much.
So area of concern, and we talked about it just a little bit. You're seeing it in the papers quite a bit. You're hearing the Alaska travel industry talk about it. You're the cruise industry talk about it. At this point in time, we have enough money to get us through FY09. 2010, we've got, the major part of the summer, July, August, September, when the tourists are in focus there. And if we're looking at a 20%, 20-30% reduction, who knows? So anyway, we've got enough for this year. We'll see what next year brings. Because once again, we operate, part of our funding is the ticket revenue that we take in, that we earn. And our business manager makes an educated guess, and we'll see how that turns out.
Jim, so you're saying that right now we're doing well, you don't have to have a supplemental, but right. If there is a 30% drop, you probably will, because...
Not in 09. It's
not in 09.
2010. Okay. Right now we're looking good to get us through 09. We don't have the crystal ball for 2010.
Sure.
We just had our marketing manager come back from a big RV show. She was actually surprised because the people that are coming to the RV show, and maybe there's less of them coming, but the people that are coming says they don't have a problem. this downturn is not affecting them. They've got their motorhomes and they're going to go wherever they want to go.
Okay, Representative Kukesh?
This is really off the budget.
Senator, sorry.
This is really off the budget, but I wonder if you looked at all at the IFA. I'm a little bit concerned if they don't get the money from the state that they're requesting, whether or not they're going to be around. And the nice thing about the IFA is they take over a route that you would have to run if they weren't there. But I noticed that the request from the IFA is getting larger every year, and I know you have to look at all of those numbers, but have you had any consideration or thoughts about that at all?
I think you have a very valid concern, Senator Kukesh, through the chair, and the one thing I would caution you about is that it can't come through the Marine Highways. And it can't come through the Marine Highways because of the negotiated contracts with the labor unions.
And my point isn't that at all. My point is that they disappeared. It would really impact your budget because you'd have to go back in there.
And
is there a point where we make a contribution to their facility so they continue to operate, or is there a point where the numbers say, well, we better take it back over again?
So I can tell you, we've talked about this quite a bit amongst the Marine Highway because we see it out there too. If they stopped functioning today with our budget, we can't afford to take over. We do not have the budget to take over their boats and run them.
Okay.
Is what we would do is we would steal a Lutuvia from Metlakatla. They would get one round trip a day, and Hollis would get one round trip a day with the Lutuvia. Same budget.
I see.
So it would be less service to Metlakatla. They wouldn't get the two round trips, but that's what we would do immediately. Mm-hmm. We would need more money in order to operate the IFA in our budget. Somebody would have to give us permission to do something there, or tell us, you do it and we'll get you the supplemental, let us know what the number is. Immediately, the thing that we could do would be to utilize a vessel that's not gonna cost us more money because you've a little bit more in fuel, but that's about it.
Follow up,
Representative. And I'm really hoping that they're gonna survive and stay, and if there has to be a contribution from the state, I hope we continue to do it, because the last thing I want to do is see happen is them disappear and you have to pick up that cost. But I'm a little bit concerned about that. But I just was wondering if there was a number someplace that says, when they start asking for this much of money, then we better do something different. You probably even thought about it, but just think about it. We'll talk about it some more.
And I think talking about it would be a good thing, offline.
Thank you.
Okay. So we don't know what's coming for 2010. That's pretty much an unknown for the tourists, but we'll see. So negotiated contracts, we've already talked about the IBU. We're still in negotiations with Masters, Mates, and Pilots and the Marine Engineers MEBA Union. You'll see that their end dates are a year away. They took the 3% increase in pay and had the one-year extension, but their contracts expired June 30th of 2008. We are going to be meeting with them again here soon, and I hope to make progress. Of concern to probably all of us is the fast vehicle ferries of Fairweather and the Chenega, and I'm going to read right off of here because this has been approved by law for me to say. The Fairweather is currently undergoing its first federal CIP project, a major engine overhaul, and it's got other projects going on in the vessel. Additional corrosion has been discovered in the Fairweather's engine cylinders. If you remember when the Fairweather first came out and for minimum hours on the Chenega, they had a recommended coolant in the engine. That coolant caused corrosion. They took the coolant out, they replaced it. When the Fairweather went in the yard, they found problems. They did two borings of the cylinder linings. They thought that that would get everything out. It didn't. So the Department of Law is now working with Director Shipyards, the vessel builder, and MTU, the engineering manufacturer, to resolve these problems. MTU has expressed a willingness to address the problem at their expense. Law and their technical consultants are working to ensure that MTU's solution fully resolves the corrosion problem. You may be aware that there was vibration problems, the reduction gears in the shaft, that's been solved. What they did at their own expense solved those problems, but we haven't solved what the coolant problem caused. So that's a major concern to us. Ketchikan layup facility.
I'm going to interrupt you just a little bit here. And so and that's all getting taken care of because they're all still under warranty?
It's not under warranty, but it was their recommendation to use the coolant that caused the problem, and they're sticking by it.
Okay, great. Okay.
It is decreasing the life of what those blocks will be.
Okay.
And that's all being worked out with legal.
Okay, right. Thank you.
And Representative Johansson, maybe I'll try to answer your questions that came up the other day. In 2006, the legislature granted LA to spend federal funds on a layup facility in the Ketchikan area. And as Jeff Otteson explained on Tuesday, federal funds bring rules and regulations, which means you need to do a study. So we've been took off on the guidelines of spending federal funding, which is not a bad thing, because even if we buy this with general fund money, following the rules of the feds means we can spend federal money on this. So my guidance to them is follow the federal guidelines, because we got a lot of things that we want to do with this property. The GF money, $5 million, came in May 16th of 2007, fiscal year 2008. We are really close to having something down in Ketchikan. We need to assess the property. That's happening right now. We need to get evaluations on the property. And hopefully the community of Ketchikan doesn't see deep pockets and get too greedy. I mean, we've got $5 million. It would nice, there's gonna be, the actual study that was done by Ketchikan on the dock facility indicates that the dock itself needs about $6 million work. It is fine for us to tie vessels up there. We have tied vessels up there and rented the space on the dock that's in the bay. The key to this for us is this allows for a whole bunch of potential future expansion for the Marine Highway System in Ward Cove. So this property is very valuable to us for the future, depending on what comes the Marine Highway's way. But that's one of the reasons why the hang-up is trying to follow the federal process. Although we certainly appreciate the state money and we hope something happens here in March. So we'll see how that comes out. Bellingham Terminal Facilities. The important thing here is this was a 20-year lease. It expires in September of 2009, and they say they give us a very, very favorable lease, which they did to get us out of Seattle to go to Bellingham, and they now want more money. So and that's it's in the, we're negotiating it, so that's all I'm going to say, but expect it to cost more money.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. Are there any other options besides Bellingham? I mean, do they know they're the only ones that are viable, or is Seattle or some port in Canada maybe on the West Coast?
A lot of people have asked the question about Seattle. I will tell you that our vessels, even though they used to go there, we put governors on the Columbia to slow it down so the vibration isn't there. The Malaspina, we baby it a little more because the boats are I don't really think that our boats could run to Seattle on a timeline any more than a week. I think you'd have to run them fast enough that you're now potentially doing damage to them. Seattle at one time was interested and was wanting to bid the last time we did a little 5-year rollover on this and expressed interest. The waterfront property in Seattle is so valuable for somebody to commit to us for one day's operation a week. They just have to ask for a lot of money. The biggest problem is we only need it one day a week, but we need it all day. And so that really makes it tough for anybody else to step in and say, I mean, there's other docks that are down there. If our stern would fit them, the problem is they got boats coming and going. And we can't pull in there and unload all the cars and take on fuel and clean up the whole ship and take on stores. So we sit at the dock all day and then start loading again. I mean, you've got 4 hours just of loading the Columbia at a minimum.
Wow. Follow-up, Johansson.
Any other options, Port Hardy, anything in near Seattle and Canada, or are you basically negotiating with an entity that knows they're the only option?
Well, I think there's two things. I think, number one, they think that they may have us, but they also know that we can pull out. Most contracts that the state of Alaska has an expiration date. And if based on how much they charge, it may not be, and it certainly brings up the issue, you're parallel on a road, and why are you parallel on a road? And they know that. It's tough negotiations, and it's negotiations, so I can't, I maybe have already said too much.
Follow-up?
I guess you got to the crux of my point. They know you can pull out, but my question is, where do you pull out to? And I'm not asking you to divulge anything that's going to screw up your negotiations, but I trust that you have options that put them under your thumb a little bit to some extent. That's just a comment, but I'm sure you guys know what you're doing. So.
Go ahead.
So the Prince Rupert facility. The scope is to acquire this facility. We have had we've been operating out of Prince Rupert since 1963 when we built the first three boats. That terminal is that dock. It's the same dock that was built for 1963 operation. The community of Prince Rupert in the lease, where they were supposed to be taking our lease payments and keeping up the maintenance of the dock and doing everything. I'll tell you, Prince Rupert has had it just as bad as Alaska, if not worse, and they haven't done that. We have been bugging them for a long time, and in fact, we were the ones that telling them that your dock is not sufficient. And they would do a study and came back and say it's safe. And we tell them, well, you might think it's safe, but it's not, it's not sufficient. And finally, they actually had to close it down, do about $1 million worth of work. This is kind of a Band-Aid for a 3 to 5 year timeline, and they don't want to be in the dock business anymore. They don't want to be the one to come up with the money to rebuild this dock. So we're looking at either a purchase or a perpetual lease of some kind, and then we would rebuild the facility, and we would have to get the money to do that. We don't have the money to do that yet, but we're investigating what it would mean and what it would cost.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
You have a request in the capital budget for that project this year?
There is LA in the capital budget to spend federal money, And it may be a step ahead, but depending on how, everybody seems to be trying to make this happen, including the people in Prince Rupert. They know the importance of this, and they're trying to make it happen. So the sooner we can have a purchase agreement, and we may move money from one project to another to do that, and then you can get started on the environmental and the planning of a dock. You know, rebuilding the dock so you don't have too much of an interruption in service. And Representative Munoz, you had a couple of questions. So I called our ferry terminal manager down there, and the railroad is not a problem, and it has never caused us a problem. I talked to the city, and the railroad goes right in front of the Alaska Marine Highway property. And the concern is that with all the development of the container ship down there, that this may impact us or harm us. This is a spur line. It's not the main line. It's a spur line that they use to stage trains or to build trains. I was told by the city that phase two of the container ship project is going to include a whole bunch more railroad track over by the container terminal that will probably mean this line even gets used less. So the tracks, as far as everybody's aware of, but they're going to watch it and monitor for us, and we put a note on this property to follow up on it. It doesn't look like the tracks are going to be a concern.
Jim, I have a question here. Is it possible that we could just drop the Bellingham route, and if we're going to maybe own the dock there in Prince Rupert, is there enough space there that in the future that we would be able to have that as our starting point instead of Bellingham?
As a southern terminus, that's where the system started. It started at Rupert northbound. There's a timeline on that second slide that shows you when we started going to Bellingham. I can't remember 67 or whatever it was, but or to Seattle. Yeah. So, but that's where the system started, was Prince Rupert.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
Yeah, I keep asking about Prince Rupert and what you're going to do down there, because last year that was really your big basis for your schedule shift, which caused a lot of discomfort with a lot of people. As you well know, you got a lot of comments, so did I, and I think everybody else in Southeast did. But that's one that really looking closely on for you to if it's that important to your core schedule that you testified to last year that you're staying with for 3 years, then obviously that must be an extremely important project down there. So I wish you luck on that.
You bet. We need to purchase it and rebuild it. Somebody does, and they're not gonna. So, Angoon, when the Lakani went from a 24/7 boat to a 12-hour boat, 12-day boat, the connection between Angoon and Sitka went away. We are looking at it's an $8 million project, but we're looking at building the Angoon ferry terminal so that it can accommodate both the Lakani and the fast ferry. The fast ferry goes right by out front. It's actually going to be cheaper for us to provide service by stopping the fast ferry in at this dock, and it reconnects Angoon with Sitka. So this is the number one project for the Marine Highway System. We're hoping to have it out this year and done by November. Economic benefits of the Alaska Marine Highway System. This is the tourists. This is the third of the passengers that ride on the Marine Highway System. 55,000 of them from May of 2006 through April of 2007. $45 million spent on lodging, food, in-state transportation, and other purchases while in Alaska. While it's only a third of our ridership, it's half of our fare revenue. And a lot of that is because it's the long haul. These are the people that get on in Bellingham and go to Haines Gagway and head up to Anchorage and Fairbanks and Denali. And they're the people that come and spend a month in the state. These are the kind of tourists that you like. Economic benefits of the Alaska Marine Highway System. This is just the money that the Marine Highway System spends in state. This is 80% of our budget. $115 million a year is spent in the state of Alaska. Counts for 1,440 jobs and $173 million. These economic impacts are limited to the effects of the Alaska Marine Highway System in state spending. They do not capture the role of the ferry transportation infrastructure in supporting economic and business development around Alaska. They come up with this number, the indirect impacts. There's a 1.5% multiplier used in economic models for industrial businesses. That's where they get the additional $58 million. So the money we pay our employees, and most of them live here. A lot of the fuel we buy is all through Petromarine, a lot of the supplies. $115 million a year is spent out of our budget here in Alaska, and it amounts to $173 million and 1,400 jobs. The new Alaska Marine Highway website, it was developed in-house. We've got a pretty talented group of people down in Ketchikan. When the move happened from Juneau to Ketchikan, it was pretty devastating to the Alaska Marine Highways. 90% of our people went somewhere else. But I'll tell you, there's class people in Ketchikan. And they are getting up to speed, and the Marine Highway System are doing lots of things now to manage the system, to make the system better. And we have a fantastic person down there in-house that rebuilt this website on his own. On this website, and if I can get out of here, I will bring it up. Let's see if I can find this. FerryAlaska.com. This is our new website. There's lots and lots of new features that are on the website. And if you go down this scroll bar on the right-hand side under news and updates, there you can jump all over. You click on any of these things, there's all kinds of different things under it. But under news and updates is the Alaska Class Ferry. And they did, the project managers on the Alaska Class Ferry just did an excellent job, and there's huge amounts of information. If you go up here under this, select a link, and I encourage everybody, your aides, anybody to get a chance. The introduction page, the importance page, there is huge amount of information here on why we need a new class of ferry, why we're doing what we're doing, the timeline that we're on, why we need to do it now. A lot of background information on this site. This box that you see on the page there, this is out of an engineering economic analysis, and it says, so rather than asking what the remaining life of a ferry could be, we really want to know what its economic life is. And that's where you get to the point of, do you put new engines in a ship, or do you take that money and go buy a new one? And that's where we're at with Malaspina. This is the next presentation, will be the Alaska Class Ferry. And I don't know if you got questions, or you want to take a break, or whatever your preference is.
Any questions?
I just had one more.
Representative Johansson.
Yeah, back slide 020, I think, talking about the 55,000 visitors from outside of Alaska. I think I remember seeing something about how many of those people end up in the rail belt and spend time and money in, maybe not Representative Dugan's district, but maybe Senator Menard. And I can't remember off the top of my head, but the importance of this in funneling 55,000 people a year up into areas that a lot of their residents don't even know the Marine Highway exists.
You bet. I'm off the top of my head, I think Anchorage was the second most visited place by Alaska Marine Highway passengers. Off the top of my head.
Might be interesting to redistribute that, yeah, those facts to some folks that are not on the coast.
And the one thing that, you know, when we talk about the economic benefits that are in here, the one thing that we've never ever tracked, and look at Metlakatla, 24,000 people from Metlakatla going to Ketchikan to do what? Spend money. You know, to Angoon, Hoonah, Haines, Skagway, Whitehorse. These are all they're not the tourists. They're the 68% of the people that ride the Marine Highway System to do what? Spend money in state. And this is what you're seeing with Juneau becoming a hub, with Ketchikan becoming a hub. is our, guess what? You're not getting on a plane going south, buying 300 pounds worth of stuff and taking it home with you. You're staying in state and spending your money. And that's that economic benefit, we've never done.
Well, I think if it's all right with you and if it's all right with everybody else, we'll just continue. We might have a little extra time to get out early. Who knows? So go ahead, Jim.
So we will go to the Alaska Class Ferry presentation. And we are early, so I was actually going to have on the phone line two technical experts if you had technical questions. Robert Eske is our senior vessel construction engineer, and he is the project manager for this project. I don't know if he's online or not with us being early. And Elliott Bay Design Group is the designer of the project. I may be able to answer your questions. If not, we can get back to you.
All right.
So this project is hugely important to the Alaska Marine Highway System, and it's our hope that this vessel will lead the Alaska Marine Highway System and make it a sustainable system for the long term. Our goal is to design a vessel that addresses the needs of a variety of stakeholders and provides them the opportunity to maximize the use of the system. So let me make that bigger and see what happens there. So the mission statement, just what it says, design and construct the next generation of ferries to begin the replacement of the aging Alaska Marine Highway fleet. These ferries will be environmentally responsible, fuel efficient, and versatile. They will enhance the Alaska Marine Highway operations on current and future routes within inside waters. They're not ocean going boats. They're not going to help Kodiak. They're not going to help the chain. They're not going to help Yakutat. And they will enable Alaska Marine Highway to continue its tradition of providing a safe, reliable service. Versatility, hugely important. I'll use the Lituya as an example again. The Lituya is a one vessel. When the Lituya goes out of service, we have no vessel to replace the Lituya, and they get no service to Metlakatla. So they call up the IFA and say, hey, IFA, well, instead of sitting in Ketchikan for 5 hours, would you run over to Metlakatla and pick us up? And the IFA does that. Well, this next winter, the Lituya's got its first CIP projects, and it's going to be out for about 3 months. So this is the problem you have when you build specific vessels to do specific things and you don't have another one. So that's why we call this it's a design of vessel. And you're going to need more than one of them. And they need to work in the existing facilities that the Marine Highway System has. Project participants. So the manager of this project is the Alaska Marine Highway System. We have a group of shoreside managers, and we have selected members from the crew. And I think it's very important to note that we are involving the crew here. In fact, when this PowerPoint was sent out to MTAB, and it was sent to, we opened it up online, it was sent to every crew member within the Alaska Marine Highway fleet, so they know how to follow along and provide their input into this project. As noted earlier, Elliott Bay is the design group. We've got Gradient Associates that has been hired by Elliott Bay to facilitate the public process to make sure that we do it right. It's very, very important to us that the public, the owners of this system, have their input. The Marine Transportation Advisory Board, very important to the Marine Highway System. We made the presentation to them on the 26th. Their biggest comment is, why are you spending time on a public process? But I will tell you, the hour that they spent with us has already enhanced the project. Because comments made, member from Mangoon, unbelievable comments. That's why you have public process. That's why you need the input from the users, because they may say things that are very, very important. And if you don't hear them, you didn't take care of their needs. So we will go through the public process. At the same time the public process is going on, Elliott Bay will be doing work that needs to be done. So the Alaska Class Ferry is next generation of ferries, like I said. I think when you read the mission statement for this project, you need to keep in mind the mission statement for the Alaska Marine Highway, and that is that safety is always first. This is a key. One of the things MTAB impressed upon us was you got to build boats that can run in Alaska, you know, run in our weather, and that is the number one thing that for the design group is it has not only does this vessel have to be able to run in Lynn Canal, it's got to be able to run at Dixon Entrance. So this is going to be a safe vessel. This is going to be a vessel that can handle the weather. So the importance, once again, modern safe features will be incorporated into the vessel. Boy, I'll tell you, rules and regulations change all the time. And when you look at international travel, you now have the United Nations involved in seafaring through the Safety of Life at Sea SOLAS requirements, we originally started making all of our vessels SOLAS meet those SOLAS requirements. It just got too expensive, so we now have three of them. You've got the Taku, the Matanuska, and the Kennecott that can go to Prince Rupert. The rest of them are not certified to go international because of these requirements, things that you need to have on the ship in order to sail international. You build a new ship, it's so much easier to incorporate all these things. The rules that are there and the future rules that you see, the DEC rules, emission standards, a whole bunch of things on the horizon can be incorporated into a new vessel. New technologies that allow the vessel to go faster through the water, just with the coating that you have underneath. So hugely important, the efficiencies you get out of a new vessel, and we plan on taking advantage of that. So the mission background, there's been a lot of projects that have been done and been going and got started, and we're taking all of those projects and incorporating the information. I mean, the Southern Gateway Shuttle did a huge amount of work on the sea state and Dixon Entrance. That information is already being incorporated into this project. I already talked about the Lituya and how you can't just build a vessel for one single run because then you don't have a replacement vessel. You really need to build something that can serve multiple purposes. This is the outline and the timeline. We're in the feasibility study stage right now, and they will be taking public comment till I think it's the 30th of April. This project, and I heard your question the other day, Representative Johansson to Jeff Otteson, wanting to know how you select projects, how you figure them out, and how you get them, how do you get them done? And Jeff put a slide up that I thought was absolutely perfect. This project is not to say how many of these vessels you need, where they're going to run. This project is to design the vessel to do multiple things to make the marine highway system better. Somebody wants to be involved in how many of them to build. You need to be involved in the rewrite of the Southeast Alaska Transportation Plan. And that's what Jeff told you the other day. The most important way to get things in the STIP or to get things ranked is you got to be part of the plan. So that's where if you're interested in, and we want, how many of these do we want? You want to be interested in the rewrite of the Southeast Alaska Transportation Plan. And that, I'll go back there, on the introduction page, it says right there, Southeast Alaska Transportation Plan. Click on the link and you go right to it. So once again, we want a reliable, versatile vessel able to operate throughout the inside waters of Southeast Alaska. We need the public input. I mean, it was just incredible that about five words said at an MTAB meeting. You know, somebody making a comment that I see a lot of husbands taking their wives to the restroom, assisting them. And it didn't dawn on me what this person's talking about. You need family restrooms. You know, you need places where men and women can go together so they can get help from their family members to take care of their needs. Hugely important thing when you're building a vessel for the next 50 years. So On the horizon, we already talked about this. If you want to be talking about number of ferries, specific routes, schedules, you know, construction location, that'll be through a bid process, lowest bidder, but Southeast Alaska Transportation Plan Rewrite is going to give you the answer to most of those questions.
And Jim, just so that you know, I think we've got three people online that are there to help you answer any questions that you don't answer, and Robert Eske is also online.
Excellent. Thank you. So once again, public involvement portion, there's going to be at least four ways for people to give input into this meeting. They're going to have regional public meetings, key stakeholder meetings, and by that is the project is going to go out, and we really want to talk to the community structure, the mayor, the city council, the, you know, the higher up people, see what their needs are, and if they say, hey, we want to talk to you, then we might not go and visit them for a public meeting, but we can certainly have a call-in session and answer any questions that they want. So the project is going to have a lot of outreach. The website that's there, and I'll take you there when we get done again, it's going to have a comment section. It's going to have a survey that's going to come online. You fill out the questions, give your input, you make your comments. If you want to be somebody that gets emailed updates, there'll be a place for you to add that, you know, request that you get emailed the updates. On the project site is going to be all of the, you know, the minutes, the any reports, anything that's going, it's going to be right there for you to click on and follow. So we encourage people not only to give the input, but once the input stage is done, is follow along. Make sure you're getting, you know, we got yelled by the MPAM people because they didn't feel that they got built last time what they asked for. And we want to make sure that, you know, what you can't take 100% of the input and say, yeah, we'll do that. But I'll tell you, if 90% of the people are saying something, you better listen to them. So the public meetings, the one in Ketchikan has already been scheduled for February 18th. The intent is to provide the information to the people, to take input back on the information that you gave them, and then incorporate that input back in, you know, the pertinent information back into the next meeting. So that's why you see a timeline there. They will work with the communities to set up dates that work for those communities best. So you can see we've gone to major population centers, Ketchikan, Juneau, Anchorage, Sitka for the main meetings. Once again, they will be reaching out. They'll be talking to community leaders, to the tribal councils, to people to see, you know, do you want to talk to us? If you feel it's important enough for you to get a group of people together to talk to us, the project will do that. So that's the site. And once again, you can either go to this site, or the way I always do it is, just because I go to ferryalaska.com all the time.
Let's take a little bit of a lull here because Representative Dugan has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm interested in this talk about the Alaska Class Ferry, but when I go back and take a look at your fleet profile, it looks like the boats that need the most help are the big boats. And the Alaska Class, just from the description of the Alaska Class Ferry project, these are, what, medium-sized boats?
They will, right now we're saying they will be a minimum of 300 feet. When they get to really looking at Dixon Entrance and studying what it is to sail reliably through 12-foot seas, it may grow. That's part of the study, is to find out how long it's going to be, but there'll be a minimum of 300 feet. And the reason for that is we want to be able to take what drives on the highways and drive them on our ferries. 235 feet, you know, the biggest thing you can get over to Hoonah is you might get a 35-foot van on there, maybe. You know, it all depends on how big the tractor is. So you, by saying you what drives on the highway can get on these ferries, and if you're going to build one to go in Lane Canal, you're connecting to two roads. You want the stuff to drive on the roads to be able to get on the ferry to get to the town without having the shipper say, you got to downsize. You know, it doesn't work for us. You got to pay more money and put in two vans. So you're absolutely correct. They're not going to be as big as the mainliners because they're not mainliners. They're not going to have staterooms in them. They're going to, they will have crew accommodations because we want to be, the one thing we learned out of this last year's fuel spike is, all of a sudden, fuel can be the largest cost contributor to what you have. And what you may do in a day now, you know, you might go from Juneau to Sitka and back, you may say in the wintertime, the traffic's not there. So by building the crew accommodations on board the ferry, you're only going to do, you're going to go from Juneau to Sitka. Crew's going to spend the night. You're going to save $5,000-$10,000 in fuel. That's huge. By just not running back, you're going to run back the next day. So this system is going to be, I mean, this ship will be versatile in that way. It will be a day boat that can go back and forth, or you can say, well, we can also go this way. We can run 14 hours straight because the crew are going to have accommodations on board to, that they can live aboard for the week. So the passengers don't have to be on board all night. It's just the crew that have to be aboard.
Follow-up, Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I was just trying to get at a slightly different question, which is it appears from what I'm reading and what you've just said that if there's a problem with the larger, the fact that the larger ships in the fleet are the ones that are most aged, that the Alaska Class Ferry Project is not really going to address that problem. It's that's got to be solved separately from whatever decisions made about building sort of boats for the inside waters.
My answer to that would be that the Malaspina in the summertime now is a day boat in Wing Canal. Even though it's one of the most efficient boats on the Bellingham Run, the Malaspina's got to go away in 2016. We're going to replace that vessel with a day boat, which means the vessel that now is tied up all winter and we're not running for cost savings, the Columbia, is going to be the Bellingham boat. So instead of the Malaspina being the Bellingham boat, it's going to be replaced by a day boat, and the boat that you got tied up for cost savings is now going to be the Bellingham boat. So the system will change. It will have to change. But it will better utilize your vessels because they're not sitting out. It costs money to have a vessel tied up at the dock. It's not good. We got an engineer in the background. It's not good for engines to sit for long periods of time and not run them. So even though the Columbia costs, based on fuel price, about $100,000 more a week, summertime it carries, because it's got two car decks, it's got two decks worth of staterooms it carried. It does tremendous in the summertime. We just need that to work. It needs to average $100,000 more a week than the Mal does to make it pay. But because you already have layup costs associated with a boat, you take those layup costs, you put them to the run, you know, the run costs.
Follow up.
Maybe working out.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Beal, I'm afraid your answers are more intelligent than my questions.
No, it's not easy. So,
here's all I'm trying to determine here. If, in fact, there's a problem with the growing obsolescence of the larger ships in the fleet, what is it that is going to solve that problem? What I'm saying is it doesn't appear to me like the Alaska Class Ferry is the solution to that problem, because it's designed to solve a completely different problem. That's fine. So what's the solution to the problem you were talking about with the growing obsolescence of the big boats?
The system will morph in a way. Once, if you ever get two of these shuttles, and you have one running Juneau to Haines Gagway and another running Ketchikan to Rupert, the middle vessel, the boat you're talking about, now instead of doing two round trips a week through the host system, can do three round trips a week from Ketchikan to Juneau. Still needs to have the staterooms. Still needs to be a 24/7 boat. But it's going to provide more service. You're asking very intelligent, good questions, and what it means is the system will change. You will get to a point, though, and you're going to get to that point when you get to the Tustamina, where you have to replace the Tustamina with a Tustamina.
Right.
You're absolutely correct. The Columbia, I think the timeline on it was 2040 or something. It's way out, you know, it's not way out there, but it's far enough out there that at some point in time, somebody will have to say, what do we do with that boat? But right now, you're going to have the long hauls around for quite a while. The Kennecott. It's the newest, you know, it's our newest main. That boat's going to be here till 60-something, it says on that timeline. You know, a long time before you really have to say, well, what are we going to do about long haul? And I'll tell you that right now, when you look at a study on a Kennecott or a Columbia, you're looking at well over half million, three quarters of a billion dollars. Huge amounts of money for those kind of boats.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good questions.
All right. Go ahead, Jim.
I think that I can't remember why I was going back to the Marine Highway website now. I think I was going to show you where public input or something, or I don't remember. Lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
So, unless there's any more questions, I've gone through the PowerPoint. This website, the project team has put, I think they did an incredible job, and I think it will answer a lot of your questions. If you can get somebody to go there and read through it, they print out the pages, study them. If you got more questions, get them to us. This is a hugely important project to the state of Alaska and the Marine Highway System, and we need to do it right.
Okay, thank you very much, Jim. And Robert Eske, Robert, did you want my page here says that you did want to testify, or was that just to ask questions?
Oh no, that was just to make sure that I was available for Mr. Beal.
Okay. He was to make sure if I misspoke that he set you right, because we didn't want you going away thinking something that wasn't correct.
Any other questions from the committee?
Oh, Madam Chair, I can't help myself. You just said one too many sentences. Should have stopped while you were ahead. Talking about things that you may have said that aren't actually accurate, and this isn't really pointed towards you. It's more towards the gentlemen that were here before, and also the special assistant liaison, I'm sure, is listening very closely. She's heard this before, but... regarding the Southeast Transportation Plan and Mr. Otteson's comments about, you know, where does DOT decide which projects, you know, the last Southeast Transportation Plan had all kinds of things in there that never made it through that six-person panel behind closed doors who decided which projects got put out on the street. So just a little editorial, it's not quite as simple as the Southeast Transportation Plan being approved by the region, and that's just suddenly DOT decides to do what we said. It's never happened in my any time I've paid attention. So, but that's just me complaining again.
Understood.
Thank you.
And for the committee, I just did want to make comment. They did that scoring criteria. They did give that to us, and so it's in your handout on the desk. So, I think you did a great job. We didn't have as many questions as we had last time, so you helped us out there a lot, and we really appreciate it. So I guess that I can tell you that next week we're going to be talking about Thursday already. Colleague, next Tuesday, we will be having our committee in room 17. And we are going to be starting at a different time. We're going to start at 1:30. So, and then we're going to do an overview of the federal stimulus package and what it means to DOT. So I kind of got a preview of that yesterday, and it's kind of exciting. And I was hoping that we could do it sooner, but we can't do it any sooner than next Tuesday.
That's the House committee.
Yeah. And we aren't meeting as a joint committee because they've got on to other things. So, we're here Tuesday. Oh, we're here Tuesday? Oh. Okay.
That is a joint meeting.
Okay, so it is a joint meeting on Tuesday.
And Thursday it's not.
Okay. I misspoke. So it's next Thursday. We'll be doing it in room. So are we going to be here at 1 o'clock next Thursday then, or Tuesday?
Tuesday, 1:30 to 2:30.
Okay, 1:30 to Tuesday, or 1:30 to 2:30 next week.
Joint meeting
here. Okay. Joint meeting, and then the Thursday meeting will be back to our normal place. Okay. All right. Having said that, I don't see any other questions, so I appreciate it, and thank you very much. And we are going to adjourn, and I can't see that clock up there. It must be 2.